This podcast is brought to you by Parent to Parent and Care Matters. Please note that any opinions expressed by the speakers are of the individual speakers themselves and do not necessarily represent Parent to Parent or Care Matters as an organisation.
Welcome to Connect, Inform, Support on Free FM 89.0. Brought to you by Parent to Parent, the not-for-profit organisation supporting families and whānau of babies, children, teens and adults with any type of disability or health impairment.
Hello humans, welcome to Connect Inform Support. I'm Louise, your host and producer. We're going to be continuing the Care Matters podcasts this week, talking about finding and hiring support workers and the pitfalls and the successes that you have when you have to hire someone to either provide care for yourself or for a loved one. Today we're going to be talking to a really good friend of mine, David Taylor. I met him through my kids at the local school. He was a dad at the bus stop, and I hopped out of my car to say hello, and we connected on a very weird level, which was fantastic. So we'll have a good chat with him today about the years he spent caring for his brother Ken and how they went about providing Ken's support. Welcome to the show, David. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Good. Yep.
So tell me all about your brother Ken, who you cared for.
I cared for Ken for just over 10 years. Yep. And he had a spinal injury, hepatitis C as well, and cirrhosis of the liver as a result from the hep C, basically, and being an alcoholic when he was younger. Well, basically, I rescued him from living in a garage, and he hadn't had a shower for 6 months. And hadn't left the house for a year. At that time, he could stand, and he had a mobility scooter. But within a year, he'd lost the ability to stand or use his bowel or bladder. So we went from that to suprapubic catheter. Mm-hmm. Comes out your belly button. When I started to care for Ken, I had a brand new baby. And I'm a home dad, so I had a brand new baby and 3.5 year old at home.
Oh my lord.
And the older one going to school, he must have been about 7.
Far out. Man, that's just bonkers.
And I was travelling from Mungaree Bridge to over on the shore. And only doing a couple hours a day, so I go in the morning and set him up for the day and put him on the toilet and do all those cares. Luckily, in my youth, one of my first jobs was my mum, bless her, pulled me into a rest home she was working at, and I was trained as a psychogeriatric aide. So, and I'd previously cared for my mother-in-law who had bowel cancer.
Wow.
So I'd had some
A little bit of experience,
which helped.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a long story short. Justine, my darling wife, and I decided to sell our house because Ken was in such a way that the only place for him to go would be a rest home. And he, being that I've worked in rest homes, the level of care and quality of life, I felt, he wouldn't have, maybe I would have given him 5 years. Because they just don't have the facilities.
Yeah, that's it.
So we sold the house and brought another one and big commitments.
Yeah.
And brought Ken to live with us in Mungaree Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was managing all the care myself through ACC, getting funded through ACC and doing it 24/7.
Because he'd had an accident which caused the spinal injury.
Yeah, about 19, so he must have been in his early 20s, so in the 70s, he had a motorcycle accident and was an amputee. Forgot to mention that. So he lost his right arm and broke all. He was in the hospital, Green Lane, for about 2 years.
Wow, that's a severe accident.
And that's where he got hep C. That time they weren't testing for hepatitis C.
Oh my God, so he had a transfusion and ended up got hep C. Far out, man, that sucks. Yeah.
And they also didn't have the technology then to pick up what was wrong with his spine. So basically he got information in the spinal cord, which meant the membrane that covers the spinal cord was perforated.
Right.
So spinal fluid was leaking actually into the nerve system and crushing the nerves.
Bloody hell.
And that just doesn't And the thing is, with spinal injuries, it just doesn't affect your ability to walk or feel.
No.
It affects how you process your food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It affects how your internal organs work. Mm. And at the end of the last 3 years of Ken's life, he was probably what you would consider a C2, which is a brain stem.
Mm.
And he had dementia, hallucinations, high anxiety and depression. Mm. So he was complicated.
Yeah, very.
And of
very
course, it affects your ability to process your toxins out of your body.
Mm.
His skin became a major issue. That, I think, for caring someone that's home and in bed a lot and hasn't got a lot of mobility, skincare.
Yeah.
Skincare is your number one priority.
Yeah, yeah. Bed sores and things.
If we had, I had 6 months off when my son was born, Ben was born, and I had organised, by that stage, it was too much for me, and I'd brought on, I think it was Health Vision, and they're an organisation that does home care from just companion care, going out and doing shopping with you and driving you around, to full-on tetraplegic care and home 24/7. And they also provide training.
Yeah, cool.
So they said, well, they basically hired me. They took over the care. You have a middle management and higher management, and you allocate someone on who's on site to be lead carer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was that lead carer.
Right.
And you go and do, they put you through courses for, I think I was a level 4 home care worker. And then you do specialised spinal and catheter care.
Mm.
We've had a couple of poor experiences with carers.
Yeah.
You know, they're meant to do police checks, but honestly, police checks are a waste of time.
Mm.
They really are.
Just seem to be too many of them as well. I mean, I know we get checked through the school every time we do a trip, so the police are overloaded with them. I don't know how they...
Well, basically, they just check the court system and see if you come up.
Yeah.
And if you haven't been caught...
That's a good point. So if you're a danger but no one's actually caught you.
That's right. So we had one carer, because Ken was on quite heavy pain medication, I had to organise a drug register. Because they didn't have a clue.
Oh, no.
Which was really surprising for me.
Yeah.
And I had to push that. I had to push. Luckily, I had some knowledge. I don't know where I'd have been if I didn't have some prior knowledge of working within an industry.
Well, that's it, yeah. At an advantage,
And our position was different because we were getting lots of funding from ACC because it was covered by ACC.
That's a big thing, yeah.
But if you have just a parent or a husband or, you know, dementia can happen at any age. Not an age thing, it's an elderly thing, it's a across the board thing. It's very difficult to get funding, and I can't speak for those people, but I don't think it would be pleasant.
No, well, that's it. Yeah, well, hopefully the disability transformation is going to change that. You know, but we'll see. But the main reason for this is to sort of talk about the problems that you had, like you said, with the police checks and being relatively useless, and the pitfalls of having to hire people to do care, and also the successes, what worked and what didn't work, really. So,
well, what worked was listening to what Ken wanted.
Yeah.
Because he had 24-hour, 7 days a week care.
Mm.
I did 7 days a week for 6 years.
Blimey, Charlie.
And worked at another job for half of that time. And looked after the kids at home, three kids at home.
Yeah.
I can't say it's a commitment that everybody would like to make.
No, well, but often, like you said, with the funding, people often don't have a choice because they can't afford to get anyone in, so they end up having to do it all themselves.
Oh, and it's minimum wage. It's not as if you'd make any money out of it either. You know, we found the best carers we got were older women in their 40s, and generally they'd had either some experience with someone who they'd cared for themselves, or people from overseas.
Oh, that's interesting.
And we would get... I remember we had one carer in Mungaree Bridge, and she was working as just a regular old carer, getting, I don't know, $16.75 an hour, and she was a doctor from India.
Oh, wow.
She had two doctorates, and she was a doctorate in physiotherapy and a GP. and she couldn't get registration in New Zealand. And she was amazing.
Well, yeah, that kind of experience.
And we used to get a lot of that.
Yeah.
But they move on.
Yeah.
So we had some issues. We had one carer that took some drugs.
Yeah.
And that's what I ended up, because I kept a quiet drug register, and then I formalised it with Health Vision because there were issues with drugs going missing.
Yeah.
And of course, if the drugs are going missing, Ken wasn't getting his drugs.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So he was complaining about being in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And the GP and I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And what the carer was doing was saying she was giving the pills to him and pocketing them.
Oh.
So as soon as we got a proper drug register, we caught her and we got the police involved and stuff.
Yeah.
Took us 6 months.
Yeah.
Because you have to have proof. You
yeah,
can't
well,
just
that's
accuse
it.
People.
No, that's it. You've got to have the evidence.
And I think that if I hadn't kept a really close eye on his skin and his diet and really ran it, outcomes would have been different.
Mm.
Because some carers get invested in what they're doing and some just come to do the job.
Mm.
And you get a mix of it.
Yeah.
And we had 6 in a team.
Mm.
And it wouldn't be very common for me once a week to get a phone call. And because I was working for Health Vision and living at the home, they put pressure on me to fill in.
Yeah.
And just to complicate matters, all my children are ASD.
Mm. So additional needs.
Routine is important.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the pitfalls of caring for someone, I think the first thing you should do would be, if it's end-of-life care or an illness or a disease or a mental illness that affects their cognitive ability to make healthy decisions for themselves in conjunction with their GP and their lawyer, not your lawyer, their lawyer, get them independent advice and instigate an enduring power of attorney.
Mm.
And that just doesn't cover everything. There's different powers of attorney. So you have to have end of life.
Mm.
You have to have financial, medical. They're all different.
So
that at any stage you can make common sense with the help of a GP, common sense decisions for the person you're caring with.
Yeah.
I'm pretty practical about such things. And you have to have those conversations.
Yeah.
And have them early. Don't wait.
That's it.
Don't wait. Get when they're cognitively able, make those decisions.
Yeah.
And get it on paper and return to those every 12 months and assess whether they're appropriate every 12 months.
Yeah.
We had issues at the very end of Ken's life. I didn't have medical power of attorney.
Mm.
I had financial power of attorney.
Mm.
And Ken had some dementia, but not enough to tip the scales.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, that's probably a bit harsh. Not enough to be able to have me take over his medical care.
Yeah.
So he was making decisions that would sabotage his own care.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying it's really important to fix those nuts and bolts down.
Yeah.
And have a really good relationship with the GP and build that relationship.
Yeah.
And have a really good relationship with district health nurses, the ones that come around to your house. Wonderful. Don't get paid enough. Wonderful, really amazing people.
Yeah.
Great source of knowledge on everything.
That's cool.
And hook into some sort of community-minded organisation that does peer-to-peer support.
Yeah.
So get into an organisation that is filled with people that have the same issues that you have.
Yeah.
Because you have to have an outlet.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
People who care for others are a special breed. You know, you can do it as just a job, but the ones that really care, they always go above and beyond. They're never paid well enough.
That's it.
And they come and do their jobs, and you have to have a relationship with the person you're caring with on some level.
Yeah, that's
you have to have a line
that
you've got to keep professional, but you have to be able to get on with them.
Yeah.
Because if you're, in Ken's case, he would only get up 3 times a day.
Mm.
He had lots of physiotherapy exercises as well,
but
mostly just watch TV and talk.
Mm.
So you have to have something in common with them,
yeah.
or be able to talk with them,
yeah,
or be able to be comfortable enough to sit there and say nothing.
Yeah.
And just sit there and read a book or knit or do a crossword or whatever. But that I found was the most hard thing about getting care support workers is finding, and don't be afraid to go, it's not working, and get another.
Yeah. Did you get a lot of choice over who you can employ, or was there not a lot of people
that
you
could because through? I had power of attorney around his superficial care, and Ken trusted me. I would discuss it with Ken, and if Ken had an issue with a carer, he would say, look, it's not working for me. And unfortunately for some carers, Ken, when he was in pain, could be quite mean. He would yell and scream and throw a tantrum, basically. We've had carers walk out because he's been having a bad day and they couldn't cope.
Yeah.
Because when he was ill, he could be very nasty.
Yeah.
And say nasty things, which were totally not in his personality. It was driven from pain or psychological issues for him.
Yeah.
So that was an issue. But I found the best thing to do was hook into some peer-to-peer support, a community organisation that has a network.
Yeah.
Or actually get in Health Vision or Life Plus or Presbyterian support. Mm. There's many agencies out that hire carer support workers for many levels.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And don't be afraid to change.
Yeah.
If one agency's not doing it for you,
get
another one and change because it's like, you know, life is too short to put up with poor care.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we had we only had two problems. One lady was stole drugs, and believe it or not, the last week of my brother's life, a carer took $1,000 off him.
What?
So she was obviously, and Ken was kind of like that, you know, that it's the only thing he could do was provide financial aid because he physically couldn't do anything. And luckily, I was in the last sort of year of his life, I kept a close eye on his financials because he would do that.
Randomly give people money.
He would just give people money, and which is his choice. But if you're a carer for someone, you have to say no.
Yeah.
You can't do it. And even as a family member, you have to say no.
Yeah.
In my experience, when people die, families get together, if there's money involved,
it can be
messy.
Exactly.
So I was, and being that I'd already had two experiences caring for someone at the end of their life, it was very important to keep everything above board and open and clear.
Definitely.
And so everybody was knowing what's going on. And I was also the executor of the estate.
Yeah.
So I had
lots of
very
jobs.
Squeaky clean. So I had lots of jobs. Yeah, I did. I had lots of jobs. But I couldn't leave Ken to go into a rest home. He would have, I think, when he came to live with us, his GP gave him 3 years.
Wow. And how long did he live with you?
10.
I never wanted to be different.
warning for content in the next segment. There will be a minor discussion of bed sores and wound care.
Going back to when I had 6 months off. So I had 6 months off and we got some carers in through Health Vision and they were caring for him. And we, in that time when we had 6 months off, we sold the house, got him a, built him a purpose-built unit, got him in, and the first day for me back on shift, I rolled him over and he had a bed sore the size of a 50-cent, old 50-cent piece on his butt cheek, hadn't, just on a sitting bone, hadn't burst. And Ken, giving people benefit of the doubt, but Ken had psoriasis as well, so you get red spots on your skin. Yeah. So unless you're really skilled at spotting stuff or have had good, decent training, you miss bed sores. Anyway, the bed sore burst and it went right down to the bone.
Ouch.
Literally, you could put two fingers in it, right through his, if you're thinking of your butt cheek, putting two fingers in right down to the bone, to the pelvis. It took us a year. We thought, the doctor thought it was going to kill him.
Yeah.
And I went, no, it's not. So we, with the help of the district nurses and the support of the GP and really pushing high quality, well trained people, because I have an absolute fit at Health Vision after I found this.
Yeah.
I said, your people are not checking. And then I went through the spinal unit and his GP and we worked out a plan and on paper saying to Health Vision, this is the level of training that your carers have to work with this person.
Yeah.
But we managed to get his bed sore sorted.
Good.
Pressure sore, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but, you know, he deteriorated. He could use the arm that he had left for a little bit and then it went like a stroke victim.
Yeah.
It curled, got atrophy. And so he was being, everything done for him at the end of his life. So everything a normal, you know, an able body person would do for themselves, Ken couldn't do.
Yeah.
He also, he was the end of his life. The spinal injury had progressed so much that he was having issues with controlling his body temperature.
Oh, wow.
Because your metabolism goes.
Yeah, true.
So for the last year or so, he couldn't control his body temperature. So we had to monitor that.
Yeah.
And he stopped sweating.
Wow.
So he couldn't sweat.
Wow.
So really complex. You know,
yeah, very
really,
complicated.
Really complex. And we probably went through 20 carers a year. That would come and go because they just couldn't cope with it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I fought both agencies we've had in Life Plus and Health Vision. Now, my experience is overall they're a great organisation, but you have to keep on to them.
Yeah, and I think also just not because we're naming names, just this is your experience and this is the whole point, is to find out individual experience, just to give people some sort of connection, because there are people out there who are going through, oh my God, what do I do? I've got to look after my relative. I've got no idea where to start.
And they're both organisations that we found, we'd get a really good coordinator in the office who would be coordinating our staff and they'd be on board and everything would be working and they'd just get burnt out.
Yeah.
And they'd leave. And then you'd have another one. And they might not have that relationship that you've built.
Yeah.
And that was a major issue. That was a major issue.
Yeah.
Those transitions of staff, especially in the offices, was a major. But in the end, we had we built a core of four really committed carers.
Excellent.
Who were just committed. And, and they pushed to get training of their own.
Yeah.
Basically what I'm saying is that if it's not working, fix it.
Fix it, yeah.
Make a
complaint.
Don't
put up with it.
Don't put up with it. Don't feel beholden to the person, oh, it's their job, I have to worry about them coming to work, or what if I say you can't come anymore? Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
The main person you're worried about is the person you're caring for.
This discussion, Caring for Ken, David's story, will continue next week on Connect, Inform, Support.
Connect, inform, support. Join us next week on Free FM 89.0 for support and information from parent to parent. The program can be downloaded as a podcast, and of course you can get more information on our website, parenttoparent.org.nz.